From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Last week, Florida was among five Gulf Coast states and the federal government in coming to an $18.7 billion settlement agreement for claims against BP related to the 2010 oil spill disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. Florida's share of the settlement comes to $3.25 billion. We take a closer look at how the settlement funding could be allocated by state and local officials to resolve economic claims and for environmental restoration work. Plus, the Florida Supreme Court ruled that lawmakers violated anti-gerrymandering rules when they redrew the state's congressional district boundaries. We'll explore what the ruling could mean for lawmakers, voters, and the 2016 election. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Last Thursday, the Florida Supreme Court invalidated boundaries for eight of the state's 27 congressional districts. In the historic 5-2 ruling, justices ruled the maps violated the anti-gerrymandering amendments approved by voters in 2010 that prevent lawmakers from drawing political maps to favor incumbents or political parties. Redrawing boundaries for those eight districts will likely impact the makeup of districts throughout the state. The ruling is the latest in the 3-year legal battle over the constitutionality of the maps. In 2012, the maps were challenged by a group of plaintiffs led by the League of Women Voters of Florida. A Tallahassee circuit judge ruled that the original maps were unconstitutional, sending lawmakers into a special legislative session to redraw them. This latest ruling could also mean a special session for lawmakers to redraw district boundaries in time for the 2016 elections. Joining me now for a closer look is attorney David King. He's a practicing attorney in the Orlando area and lead attorney for the League of Women Voters of Florida, which led the group of plaintiffs that initially filed suit against the maps. David King, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you.
And also with us from Tallahassee is Politico Florida reporter Matt Dixon. He's been covering the redistricting court battle since the beginning. You can read his stories online at politico.com/tag/Florida. Great to speak with you again, Matt. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
And I invite listeners to join our conversation as well. Connect with our guests with a phone call to 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments or questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And David King, I've read quotes from you describing the ruling as a complete victory for plaintiffs. How so?
Well, it was because all of the districts that we challenged the challenge was sustained by the Supreme Court of Florida. If you recall the way it occurred, we had a trial in May and June of last year, 2014. The legislature was ordered, the trial court found that there was an intent when they drew the original congressional map to benefit the Republican Party. Trial court sent the case back, trial court required the legislature to hold a special session to fix the map. The legislature did that. They had a special session. They just tweaked a part of District 5 and District 10. The changes were very small. They came back, and the trial court accepted that map. And at that point, the plaintiffs, League of Women Voters and Common Cause, filed an appeal that was passed through by the First District Court of Appeal to the Supreme Court of Florida. We appealed the eight districts that we thought needed to be resolved, that the court's decision was not as fulsome as it should have been. And the Supreme Court agreed with us on every one of those districts, and they made it very clear that they also affirmed the trial court's finding that the congressional map had been enacted by a majority that were attempting to benefit the Republican Party and incumbents, and that on the remedial map, the burden shifts now when the court found the unconstitutional conduct that violated the Fair Districts Amendment, that when they redraw it, the burden's on the legislature. The legislature is not accorded any deference any longer. They have to justify the decisions they make in the new map. So we're going to get another special session, the second special session, on this topic, and the legislature is going to have to do another map, and then it'll come back to the trial court, and the trial judge will either approve it or disapprove it, and then it'll go back to the Supreme Court, because the interesting thing about this is the Supreme Court retained jurisdiction. They just relinquished jurisdiction for 100 days to the trial court. And it goes back to the Supreme Court for final approval. So the legislature is going to have to do it right. As long as they do it in accordance with the provisions of the Constitution, they'll be just fine, and the citizens of Florida will have a much improved map.
Well, it looks like they'll have to do it rather quickly as well, David. I had mentioned earlier in the show that, you know, committee meetings for the 2016 regular session start up in September. They've got just 100 days to do this. Do you think we're going to see them back in special session very soon?
Well, I think we're going to see them in special session in August, probably.
Okay. And Matt Dixon, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about the eight districts in question here. It doesn't look like they're in just one part of the state. There's, you know, North Florida, there's South Florida. Do you think this is going to impact districts throughout the state or have something of a ripple effect?
Yeah, in short, I mean, I think of Florida's 27 congressional districts, only one is really not going to be impacted. The seat represented by Jeff Miller, which is in the western portion of the Panhandle, probably won't be touched because there's really nowhere for him to go to stay with the ideal population that a congressional district needs. But every other one is going to be touched because when you have, eight seats, it's a large number across the state. Any little change to one of those districts is going to obviously impact a neighbor. And what's so different about the congressional seats is they can only go plus or minus one person from what is the ideal population. Some of the legislative seats, there's a little more wiggle room built in. There's some percentages and a little more wiggle room. But with these, it's basically down to one body. So any tweak that you make at any level is going to have a ripple effect. It's going to impact pretty much the entire Florida congressional map. And more than likely, it's going to impact both the incumbent members of Congress who are going to be in real fights now, and also at the top of the ticket, the U.S. Senate race. It's already forced one member of Congress, David Jolly, to get in the U.S. Senate race because his district became very difficult, a St. Petersburg-based seat. And there's also some questions about Gwen Graham, who's a Democrat in the Panhandle, if her district's going to become a little too difficult, a little too conservative now with these new maps, and she might have to consider a Senate bid rather than running for re-election. So it certainly had it's going to have an effect across the state, both in how the lines look, but also have some pretty broad political implications.
Right. I remember in your story that came out the day of the ruling, David Jolly's office had said he hadn't made a decision, but then that's quickly changed, as you've indicated in your later reporting. But what about the North Florida district seat currently held by Democratic U.S. Representative Corinne Brown? That seemed to be of particular interest. Is there something maybe just...
Absolutely. That seat has sort of been the flashpoint for this entire redistricting fight. It was drawn in 1992 by a federal court as a minority-majority seat, and it snakes down from Jacksonville to Orlando. And it's got this very, it's probably one of the more controversial districts in the country, and it's got a very snake-like shape, you know, throughout half the state. And what the legislature had said is they basically maintain that shape because they wanted to keep its current black voting age population above 50%. The legislature said, well, we need that to avoid a legal challenge in the future. The court disagreed with that, and they are now have asked or required the legislature to draw that seat from Jacksonville to Tallahassee. So instead of it being north and south from Jacksonville to Orlando, it's going to go from Jacksonville to kind of the Tallahassee area, the Tallahassee region along the Georgia border. And that was the version of the map put forward by Mr. King and the plaintiffs. They wanted to see an east-to-west version, and the court granted them that. So it's one of there's many huge takeaways from this ruling, but one of the biggest is this Corinne Brown district that's been really the biggest flashpoint is now kind of gone. The Supreme Court erased it, and onward and forward without the Serpentine-like district that's been the butt of many jokes.
Right. Well, I mean, Corinne Brown, U.S. Representative, has been particularly vocal in her opposition to the Supreme Court's ruling. Understandably, it could potentially mean, you know, losing a seat there in Congress. But she's called it seriously flawed, a possible violation of the Federal Voting Rights Act. You know, and from what I understand, that was drawn to create some minority representation for Florida's for Congress members from Florida. David King, I wanted to get your response to her criticism of the court's decision. Is this potentially a violation of the Federal Voting Rights Act?
No, because the question is whether or not that district has an ability to elect a minority African-American candidate, as it has done for the past over 20 years. And we argued that the district was one of the most meandering, gerrymandered districts in the nation, actually, not just in Florida. It was clearly the most gerrymandered district in Florida, but one of the most gerrymandered districts in the entire nation as far as being non-compact, bizarrely shaped, narrowing in some places to the width of a highway. And we concluded that it could be drawn in a more compact fashion, in an east-west fashion, that admittedly there is a slightly smaller minority population of that district, but the district drawn from Jacksonville to Tallahassee will be in an ability to elect district. We had to establish that in order for the Supreme Court to make the decision that it ought to be drawn in an east-west fashion. And so the consequence of that will be it will have a very significant impact not only on North Florida, but also on Florida down to Orlando, because as a result of that, there will be, unless the legislature does something really strange, there should be another minority ability to influence district in Central Florida, either District 10. In our maps, District 10 would have become the beneficiary of that and given an opportunity for African-American candidates to be elected in that district as well. So we think it doesn't violate the Voting Rights Act because Congresswoman Brown's district will still be an ability-elect district, and it will open up other opportunities in Central Florida that will be for the benefit of minorities and also for the citizens of Florida.
We're taking a closer look at the impact of last week's state Supreme Court ruling that some of Florida's congressional district maps need to be redrawn. We're talking with Politico Florida reporter Matt Dixon, who's been covering the case for years, along with David King, lead attorney for the League of Women Voters of Florida, which was among the plaintiffs in the case. Connect with our guests by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Post your comments and questions there. And Matt, the court initially ordered the legislature to turn over all documents related to the redrawn maps and urged lawmakers to refrain from conducting secret meetings and to, quote, consider making all decisions on the redrawn map in public view, end quote. Is that directive there related largely to emails from GOP political consultants that were, in a large part, the subject of the 2014 trial and, I guess, our last conversation on the show back in December?
Not completely. In part, I would imagine, but not completely. There's some reference there that legislative staff and legislative members actually deleted what would have been public emails to begin with. They said during the trial of former House Speaker Dean Cannon, who was Speaker of the House during this time, talked about in his office it was just commonplace after 6 months for emails to automatically be deleted. And the consultant emails you're talking about were, if the court hadn't made them public, would have been private. Mm-hmm. But some of these emails were deleted during this time frame would have been a public record to begin with. And I think that's largely what they're pointing to, one. And two, the Supreme Court, in its opinion, also took issue with some very important decisions made to the congressional changes to the congressional map that were made in closed-door meetings. There was only two lawmakers present, the heads of the Senate and the House Redistricting Committee, so they weren't a violation of state sunshine law. But they were that the court did question very large changes being made behind closed doors. A few of those decisions that the opinion or the Supreme Court took particular issue with was that Corinne Brown district, the decision to keep the black voting age population above 50%, that was made in a non-public meeting. And there was a few other changes, one specifically to split the city of Homestead in South Florida. That was pointed out. The Florida Supreme Court said the legislature can't do that and chided them for making the decision to split that city in a closed-door meeting. So the combination, kind of the intersection of some public emails being deleted along with some closed-door meetings that led to some pretty influential decisions as it relates to the congressional maps, I think are some of the things that the Supreme Court is getting to there.
All right. And Matt Dixon, do state lawmakers have the ability to appeal this ruling and just further extend this legal battle that's been going on? Go ahead.
I believe they would have the ability to appeal. They're not going to. They've said there might be some additional motions filed to seek clarifications or tweaks to the Florida Supreme Court's opinion, but they're not going to make a real legal push to try to overturn this in any way. I think they understand they're going to have to come back for a special session sooner rather than later. Like I said, there might be a motion or two filed, but by and large, they understand that they're going to be back in Tallahassee for a nice hot August special session to draw these congressional maps. Mm.
And David King, are you concerned that sending the maps back to the legislature to figure out again will simply garner the same results in terms of district boundaries that don't follow anti-gerrymandering amendments that Florida voters approved?
Well, the good news this time, John, is that the Supreme Court gave some pretty definite direction to the legislature about what they've got to do on the redraw. They made it very clear that, for example, District 5 has got to be drawn in an east-west direction. They made it clear that as far as Districts 13 and 14, that 14 was not to go across Tampa Bay. So consequently, District 13 will be in Pinellas County without the big slice of St. Petersburg being removed across the bay to be part of District 14. They indicated that Homestead should not be divided. So they gave very specific directions that I think the legislature surely will comply with. If they don't, they do face the prospect of the Supreme Court drawing the map when it goes back up again. But I would be very surprised if the legislature at this point would take a different approach than that directed by the Supreme Court in this decision.
And this is somewhat tangential here, but in June, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states do have the authority to make redistricting powers or to take those redistricting powers out of their hands and, delegate that power to independent commissions. Matt, in covering this legal battle, has that idea ever come up in Florida in a significant way?
If it has historically, I'm not aware of it. It certainly hasn't in the most recent years. A decision like that would presumably require the legislature to take some action and, the lawmakers giving up their power to draw the map. I'm not sure if that would be a feasible idea. So I've never really heard the idea. I think probably some Democrats have at least brought the idea up, but they're in a significant minority position here, and that I don't think the idea's ever gotten any real momentum in the legislature. And if it has in decades past, it was a little before my time, but in recent years, it's really never been part of the conversation.
And David King, is that something that ever came up in, conversations with the league or with other plaintiffs, that concept?
Well, certainly I've heard a lot of interest, particularly since this decision, in a commission. The problem is getting a group like that into place. Actually, the legislature raised the same argument that was involved in the Supreme Court decision of the United States that you're talking about in the Arizona case, based on the elections clause in the Constitution, they raised that argument in our case to say that there was no basis for these provisions of the Fair District Amendments that put strictures on the legislature that actually required them to meet certain standards in the redistricting process. The interesting thing is the legislature filed an action right after the Fair District Amendments were passed and went to federal court and lost. And then they raised the issue again in our case, and fortuitously the Supreme Court stamped that out by saying that even a commission, which would be much more than just simple strictures or standards that the legislature had to follow, you could even turn it over to commission, and according to the Supreme Court of the United States, that would be appropriate because it's an initiative of the people that resulted in the commission. The problem is the legislature had a problem in following the dictates of the people. The people made it clear that they don't want gerrymandering. They want to they voted in the Fair District Amendment, which said there shouldn't be political protection in drawing the districts, that the legislators shouldn't pick their voters. And the legislature was hostile to that idea from the very start. They opposed the amendments. Most of the major players, in our case anyway, were in the group that was fighting those amendments. And when the amendments came along and were passed by the people, they had a choice. But what their choice was not to follow the amendments. The choice was to say we're going to follow the amendments, to say we're going to be transparent, to say we're going to be the most transparent redistricting process in the entire country, and then at the same time have these continued backroom meetings and deal with the political operatives and get the result the way they wanted it so that it benefited the political party in control. And that's what the Supreme Court said they shouldn't have done, and that's what we hope they will issue in the future.
And David King, you know, just based on your experience as an attorney, certainly you know the ins and outs of litigation and how long things can take sometimes. But just personally, do you maybe find a level of frustration with this whole legal battle? Just, I mean, thinking about it in terms of the fact that the U.S. Census data that this redistricting was supposed to be based on was compiled in 2010. Here it is, 2015. We're just going to be doing this again in 5 or 6 years.
Well, it is frustrating, but of course, remember, John, this is the first time we've been down these paths with the Fair District Amendments. This is the first go-round, and so we've been creating a bunch of law, a bunch of decisions, principles, and cases that will apply in every redistricting cycle in the future. And so it has been painful, and it's a when you litigate with the legislature that has the ability to spend the public's money to hire very fine law firms and to fight every at every fence row, you know, and it's cost, I think the legislature, I saw an article that said they'd spent over $8 million defending the gerrymandered districts. So, yeah, it's a little frustrating at times, but my clients felt strongly that this situation ought to be dealt with, and that the amendments, it's not enough to pass the amendment to the Constitution, but it's necessary to make sure the legislature follows it. And that's what we've tried to accomplish in this litigation.
All right.
And I think we have.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. But thank you so much to my guests, David King and Matt Dixon. Great to speak with you both again. David King is lead attorney for the League of Women Voters of Florida, which led the plaintiffs that brought the suit. Matt Dixon covers state government and politics for Politico Florida. You can read his coverage online at politico.com/tag/Florida. There's more information on the show, as well as an archive of past shows at our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. To comment on anything you've heard on this or any edition of the program, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers Luke Martin and Richard Chinqui. This is WGCU, Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.